Okay, David, you can stop clogging now.
No.
Yeah, 99 from Andrew Peterson. That was worth a dance or two, I think.
Oh,
that was fun.
Magic Feeder on the move.
Yeah, heard from Rochelle Hickman before that, Oh Lord of Hosts, which comes from that great tribute to C.S. Lewis album. And we also heard After the Chase to begin the hour. Good morning to you. It's now 13 and a half past 8 here in our central time zone. And Dr. Don Clark is with us from Tech. Are you in the central time zone, Dr. Don?
Oh, yeah. Yes, we're on the same time
zone. Okay. Just thought I would make sure of that. We wouldn't want to wake you up early or interrupt the main part of your day for this, but we're glad you joined us here. Dr. Don is...
Well, it's a good thing that we're on the same time zone.
Well, it is, yeah. Dr. Don Clark is a biochemist. He's on the board of Creation Moments, and that's creationmoments.com. If you get a chance to visit that site today, it would be well worth your while. And Dr. Don, welcome. We got an interesting topic today. This was an article that David used in a newscast last week, and it caught our attention, and we thought together, as we tend to do, Dr. Don should hear about this. We should talk to Dr. Don about this one. And it has to do with a new species. David, tell us about this.
Don, it's probably good that I don't know your phone number because, you know, I pass this on to Jim, and it's just, let's call him right now.
Well, I can give you my phone number, but
it'd be dangerous.
You wouldn't dare.
It'd be dangerous. No, you have a life. Do you want me to go over the entire story?
Well, not the whole story. Just lead into it a little bit. So warm us up with it.
Yeah. We've seen what the Chiquilidae look like. They look like angleworms. They're determined to be amphibious. And supposedly related to an African version of an amphibian, by DNA. I mean, that's what scientists have figured out so far. The female of the species brood the eggs for months, apparently not feeding. I mean, they wrap themselves around kind of like, and, you know, long skinny chickens, and they wrap themselves around the eggs, and then the eggs hatch and become, you know, big or little Chiquilidae.
And these were found in India, right?
Mm-hmm, in northeastern India.
Okay.
It was found. They were somebody was digging for a development. They were either putting up a shopping center or a new housing development or maybe some new apartments, and they found these critters.
They weren't looking for bait then.
No, they weren't. And they were, you know, they, now nobody has suggested that they would, with some fried up mushrooms and maybe a marinara sauce, that might be tasty. Nobody's saying that.
Hmm?
But they're saying they've never seen it. The scientists are saying they'd never seen anything like this before. I thought it was particularly interesting that the one researcher from the University of Delhi said they're a very cryptic group, but it's not possible to identify whether it's a new species or we've just never seen it before.
Well, what I'd like to ask, Doctor, and I'm looking at this thing, and the picture I'm looking at, it's kind of coiled up in a researcher's hand here. Looks like it might be 8 to 12 inches long, about as big around as your little finger, I think. And, of course, legless, it just looks like a little snaky sort of thing. And I'm wondering... There can't be new species. There are undiscovered species, perhaps, and we find them and we name them. Is it possible, though, to find a new species and date how long it's been around? They're already talking about this going back to the dinosaurs or being linked by DNA. How can they possibly know that from a living creature today? Is there a way to date those?
Well, there is no way of dating dating of a living creature. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's living today, so any date that you might get off of it is going to say, well, it's living now.
Yeah.
So, and you'd want to get to know them first anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Before you destroy them.
David.
I'm sorry.
Go stand in the corner of the newsroom, would you please?
I'll go stand in the corner.
All right. So, but what they do is... they do DNA fingerprinting is what was done here, and so they obviously they have to kill the organism. They extract out some DNA, do some DNA testing with it, and then they look in their library and say, is there another species that's been found on Earth that has been typed to with its DNA that looks like this? And that's where this other amphibious creature, legless creature, kind of fit in with the one that they found. And so from there, they make a tremendous assumption, and they even say themselves that you know, the DNA testing suggests that this is related to the African version, and that goes back 140 million years when we had this supercontinent called Gondwana.
Ooh,
and that was the supercontinent broke up and made up Africa, the continents of Africa, Antarctica, Australia, South America, and India. And so this was found in India, so there's, you know, a connection with Africa. And so the interesting thing is, though, but how can they, you know, how can they possibly, they're not saying that this species is necessarily, you know, that old, but that's how they type it. I mean, it's just through the DNA typing, and they're saying, well, we found this other species in Africa, which looks close. Its DNA signature is close to the one that we found. So based on that, we're saying, yeah, it looks like it came from India. I mean, it came from South Africa.
How is DNA similar? I mean, is it percentages? Is it the same order of certain chromosomes? How do they determine that two genomes, would you call it a genome, are similar?
Well, I don't think, and I don't have the full article here, but yeah. I don't think the full DNA sequencing of this new species was actually done. What you can do is you can take DNA and do electrophoresis, a two-dimensional electrophoresis, which basically separates the DNA into spots on a plate, if you will, mm-hmm. and then you compare those spots with you know, similar spots from another species. And so if the base pairs are similar, then they're going to migrate in the same general, you know, vicinity as maybe another species. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what was done here. But like I said, I don't have the whole article in front of me.
Now, this article from the New York Daily News, I'll just read a sentence from it. It says, it also gives, this is the discovery, also gives exciting new evidence in the study of prehistoric species migration, as well as evolutionary paths influenced by continental shift. Is it accepted by the scientific community that there was one landmass on the Earth at one time?
Oh, yeah, I think that's fairly well accepted these days. This is actually suggesting that there was two big land masses, and this was even a larger landmass broke up into, like, where we have Europe and America, and then the southern portion was the Australia, Africa, India, you know, South America landmasses.
Because mm-hmm.
whether they broke up at the same time or relatively the same time, I mean, I would suggest, and others would suggest in the creation movement, that these landmasses broke up at the time of the flood.
Uh-huh.
Which would make sense.
A worldwide cataclysmic event.
Yeah, exactly.
That wiped out life, pretty much. You had mentioned, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, that there were probably more species of life before the flood than after. Did I
yeah.
recall that right?
Well, and not only before, I think Noah did his job, and with the help of God, and taking all the land species with him on the ark, so that the species could be, you know, continued after the flood. And those animals that could survive in water, you know, they survived in water and were perfectly happy. It's interesting that this particular species is the way they found it was as you suggested, but there was a whole team of you know, biologists that went out in the field, and they hired workers to do diggings. And this particular species is very sensitive to vibration. So as you're walking along, they're scattering, and they're like a foot and a half down in the soil. Mm-hmm. But they could find them when it was raining during the monsoon season. So these guys are not
come
only
up,
covered
up for
with,
air, maybe, huh?
Mud, but they're covered with water by that, you know, by that time. So is this one of the species that could have survived, you know, in the flood without having been on the ark? You know, we don't know, but it kind of suggests that it can live perfectly happily in very wet mud.
You know what this reminds me of is an old Rocky and Bullwinkle episode, David, where they had an earthworm ranch, and Rocky and Bullwinkle would walk along the surface of the ground with a staff and herd the worms from point A to point B. That's what I pictured when Dr. Don's talking about these things being sensitive to vibration, you know.
Yeah, so going back to your original question, you know, is...
I didn't mean to distract you there, but picture of Rocky and Bullwinkle flashed in before.
But, I mean, that's it's a good analogy. I mean, but, yeah, does this new species mean that, okay, it was, Jeeves, you know, it was created, you know, recently, or it branched off 140 million years ago from this other species in Africa. Well, you know, let's look at what the Bible has to say about all of this. And, of course, you know, the Bible would say that creepy things, which this would fall into, were God created them on day six, as well as the end of that day, or near the end of his creation. He created man in man's in God's image. He created them, you know, male and female. So this creature was like the other land creatures were created on day six, and then God rested. So the Bible would say that no new creatures are being made here on Earth, and that process stopped at the end of creation, at the end of 6 days. And so this creature has been around since the very beginning. And
so then we would say that would be true of any species newly discovered. And I chafe a little bit about calling it a new species. It's newly discovered then, because all the animals that exist on Earth had their precursors or their origins during that 7 days. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
During the 6 days. And with obviously plants being made on day three, and then God making the sun and the moon and all the stars and the heavenly bodies on day four, and then day five were the birds and the fish and the flying creatures and the sea creatures. And day six culminates with land creatures, creepy things, the beast of the field, and finally the pinnacle of God's creation here on Earth was man. So this species, this kind, was created way back then. Now, God put in us, I'm referring to us being everything that's on the earth, not just man, but
all creatures,
put within us the ability to have a great variation, you know, within a kind. And a biblical kind, you can grossly speak of that as a particular animal, for example, that can intermate with another species. Then if they can do that, they probably came from the same kind of animal.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, a cat is never going to be a dog or vice versa, but there will be different strains of cats, different strains of dogs.
Right. And you can have, you know, some cats that no longer breed with another cat. That doesn't mean that they came from a different kind. It just means that their DNA has diverged so much that they're no longer linked. But you will probably, in that case, find an intermediate species or an intermediate animal, for example, that they both could mate with. And a good example of this is the rabbit. There's a rabbit in Southern America, southern North America that does not mate with a rabbit that's found, a jackrabbit, for example, that's found in Canada. Mm-hmm. But there is a intermediate jackrabbit that's found in kind of Central America, Central North America, that can mate with both of them. And so the species are linked. And so they came from the same kind. It's just that as time goes on, we actually lose information. We're not gaining information. And as species diversify, then you may lose some DNA or the ability of, the DNA to have all of the information that was originally there in the original kind. I know this is a different topic than what we were necessarily talking about. But
no, it's fine. It's fascinating because the same thing applies to plants. And I remember just by way of example, there's a nursery locally who was attempting to preserve original varieties of tomatoes that were cultivated locally 100 years ago. And you can go there and buy seeds because the thought is that they will disappear unless special attention is paid to preserving the original seed intact. And you raise grapes. I mean, are there similarities here? When we're talking about DNA, we're talking about, is it impossible now to go back and recapture the original creature? Is that lost to us forever?
Well, I guess, one way of doing it, for example, is you start taking, let's take the dog species, because we know that there are many, many different types of dogs. And I would throw in the wolf into that. Mm-hmm. And so if you took all of these animals, you took the Chihuahua, you took the Great Dane, you took, all the various types of dogs, and you start interbreeding them again, you would then, to some degree, be able to build up the DNA pool that the original, in quote, dog started with.
A beginning and an end.
Yeah, it probably looked like a mutt, because mixed breeds tend to look like mutts.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Is it possible, for me to think that creation stopped at the end of the sixth day is still hard to understand, and because we're discovering so many new things, not only here on Earth, but we're discovering things in space that we just didn't know about before. It's not hard to believe that they existed already. We're just now they're coming to our attention. But do you suppose it's possible that God is creating things elsewhere? And I mean, how would we know?
We don't.
The basic question here is how what is God doing now? Is the Earth his focus of attention here as he builds his kingdom here? Because the universe is so much bigger than us. What's he doing elsewhere?
That's a good question. We can actually answer that particular question definitively. Mm-hmm. But from a biblical point of view, and that's basically our guideline. God's attention has been on the earth and on his creation and on man from the beginning, and his whole salvation, message and salvation work that took thousands of years to bring about is not only is it a love story, but it is his desire that we as humans and as man would come to know him in a personal way. And that's basically his desire. That's his focus. And there is no evidence in the Bible that there are other creatures in other solar systems, in other galaxies, anywhere else. The Bible gives absolutely no hint of that. Mm-hmm. Because it really is focused on Earth. And my thinking is, is this, and would I be shocked if someone said someday that, gee, we found this other species on another planet somewhere or in another universe? I would say that, well, you know, how many times does Jesus have to die?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for man's sin. And clearly he died once and for all, you know, for all men. And you can get into trouble really quick if you start saying, well, okay, so he died once and for all for this planet, for Earth, but for some other far galaxy and for some other unknown planet, you know, he has to die again. I mean, it's hard to imagine that a creature similar to us would not fall like Adam and Eve did.
I'm thinking that the Bible is clear that we were made in God's image, and my assumption is we're the only creature made in God's image, and that his salvation plan was for us particularly because we were made to return his love, to be in a voluntary love relationship. He's given us the opportunity in the falling away to come back of our own accord and say, God, I need you after all.
Yes, that's right.
And,
absolutely.
And even if there were a hominoid-looking creature somewhere else, that doesn't disturb me. I never would have, it would not have occurred to me that Jesus would have needed to die for that creature too, because I don't know that creature was made in the image of God. You know, because defining what that image is more than physical, and probably not physical at all. I imagine it's spiritual analogy or derivation, I suppose, or similarity. That's another whole topic that would be fun to get into you with, because you've given us some very cogent explanations of how we go from spirit to physical, and doing it in scientific terms. And that's a wonderful story, you know, and a wonderful point of view. And I'm wondering if we can maybe spend some time someday talking about what spirit is. You know, what comprises spirit?
Yeah, well, I'd love to talk about that topic. I mean, it's I've obviously got some ideas about it, but and it's one of those things that it you can have ideas, but other than what the Bible actually says about our spirit, that God breathed the breath of life into us, and we get into that in chapter 2 of Genesis. And that this breath of life actually was the essence that turned this mechanical machine into a living being. And and then you have examples in the Bible, for example, Ananias and Sapphira, when they sold a piece of property and they come
to Peter. Yep.
To Peter, and Peter says, well, is this the amount that you sold your property for? And they say, yes. They die instantly. You know, so God took their spirit from them, and when their spirit left their body actually no longer existed. Mm-hmm. And there's other examples of Christ, and even Jesus on the cross. He was the only one, for example, that gave up his spirit. He had the ability to give up his spirit to God the Father. We don't have that ability, you know, to give up our spirits at any time and say, okay, you know, I'm finished with this body. I'm just going to give up my spirit. But Jesus on the cross, you know, obviously said, into thy hands I commit my spirit. And so when his spirit left, his body no longer was living.
Mm-hmm. Well, so life is something other than the body, is what we're saying. Life is,
yes.
Is it energy?
Yeah,
is it intellect?
More
is it,
than here on Earth, I mean, and with us. And here's the problem, you know, where evolution cannot answer, you know, these things. The point of life and death. You know, we can keep a body, we think that we can keep a body living artificially through, if we need an artificial heart, if we need artificial lungs in order to keep a, you know, body in the state of a coma, mm-hmm. For example, hibernation, if you will, for a long period of time without that person being conscious. If that body is still alive, their spirit is still with them.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as their spirit leaves, that body dies. And we can do, you know, we can do heroic efforts to try to revive that body. But if the spirit is no longer there, that that body is not living.
Mm-hmm. And if it works at all, it simply preserves the organs in a state where they can be rejuvenated and reused. At least
that's right.
That would be the hope. Okay. Dr. Don, as always, it's fascinating to talk with you. And I love where our conversations go. We can start in one point, and usually I bounce it in about 27 directions, and they all turn out to be fun and interesting. Just a delight to talk with you. And I think next week we're going to tackle global warming here a little bit. And you sent me an article. Thank you for that. I made a mistake, he says, huh?
Hmm. Oh yes, that'll be an interesting topic because at least the guy is humble enough, which is not found very often.
No,
in the popular scientific community and politics when politics is involved,
especially when funding is involved too, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'll have to hand it to him. He's at least admitting that he made a mistake.
Well,
Dave, things aren't heating up like he thought they were.
Well, we'll delve into this in detail next week. And David now has had lots of time to be Googling Chick-fil-A-Day, and I'm wondering if maybe you found some recipes, David.
No. The marinara sauce and the mushrooms. I think that'll probably do it.
It's gross.
Perhaps sausage, but maybe not because it's already a source of protein.
And a nice Ruby Cabernet to go with it. I think so.
Yeah. And so do you then put that over spaghetti?
Makes sense to me. Oh, interesting article. You can look them up. You can search for yourselves for Legless Amphibians. New York Daily News had an article. And David, where was your article? That was the BBC, was it?
BBC, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you go onto the BBC website and their search engine is up on the top, it said for whatever reason it's kind of dragging its heels today, but if you write down discovered new amphibian,
we'll find you got some more interesting pictures on that site, I think, than the New York Daily article. So, Dr. Don, go ahead.
One final question, Don. These apparently are asexual reproduction. Does that make sense?
All right. Well, some amphibians can certainly do that. They don't necessarily need male and female.
Yeah, because there's no mention of males in the story.
I mean, so God said, wait a minute, Noah, you just need one of these?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Just need one.
You've got a single parent family here that's she's reproducing her own.
Ah, interesting stuff. It is. It's just fascinating to what this leads into. Dr. Don, again, a biochemist on the board of Creation Moments, and I heartily recommend a visit to their website, creationmoments.com. And they've got DVDs available and just a wealth of resources for your church and your Bible studies and your small discussion groups. And it's great to have. And you can listen to Ian Taylor in Creation Moments several times a day here on Broken Road Radio. We invite you to do just that. And Dr. Don, we invite you back next Monday. We'll look forward to taking a look at global warming. Do you have a...
All right. Well,
Yeah.
It'll be an interesting discussion. I look forward to... To seeing you all again, hearing and speaking with you again.
Likewise, that's the global warming thing. Now you got my appetite whetted.
He's already Googling, I think.
No, I haven't Googled yet, but I'm really on the verge.
Music from Dan Fogelberg on our Broken Road Radio Monday morning. Good morning to you.